I'm very excited about this special thing about me. I don't know what it is yet. So
you're very special, Jimmy. If you don't know why, it will be magically revealed to the world in a few seconds.
Well, I'm as excited as anyone, believe me.
I'm hobo.
Business, lifestyle, and the philosophical implications of business whilst wearing shabby trousers, or no trousers at all.
Ladies, gentlemen, hobos, welcome to another podcast, another Hobo CEO podcast. I'm Chris, and joining me is...
your partner in crime, Nico.
You got it, man. So how's the crime going?
The crime is actually going pretty well. Like, depending on the choice of industry, it's what you need to do.
Excellent. This is a very pertinent issue because we got a review from police robots.
Yeah, yeah. They're already tracking us.
We're all being tracked. We all know this now. No secrets.
Big news now, yeah.
Before we get into the main subject for today.
Becoming a hobo Houdini.
That's it. Which is also kind of related to, you know, crime and escape. And before we get into becoming a hobo Houdini, let's see what police robots had to say. My review voice.
Do the review, Russ.
5 stars.
A podcast for all CEOs, not just hobos. By police robots from the United States. Yeah, buddy, don't be fooled by the hobo CEO title. The content on this show is amazing and applicable for any entrepreneur, whether you wear your trousers at home or not.
That's from Terry from Build My Online Store. Thanks.
He's got a nice podcast rolling as well. Listen to episode featuring Brandon Tully.
Ah, splendid. Yep.
Good stuff, good guests. A lot of great interviews. So, Chris, who do we have on the Hobo Suitcase this week?
We have a very special guest this week. I won't reveal their name. Well, I can reveal their name. It's Jimmy Hayes. But there's something...
he's got to be the world's Hobo Suitcase expert. If
indeed.
There's one.
Let's save the details for the interview where all is revealed. And joining us today for a very special hobo inside the hobo suitcase is Mr. Jimmy Hayes. Hello, Jimmy.
Hello there. How are you?
Very well. Thank you for joining us.
So, no problem. My pleasure.
A good friend, fellow hobo. There's something very special about Jimmy, very pertinent to inside the hobo suitcase, which we will ask him about at the end of the interview. Anyway,
I'm very excited about this special thing about me. I don't know what it is yet. So
you're very special, Jimmy. If you don't know why, then it will be magically revealed to the world in a few seconds.
Well, I'm as excited as anyone, believe me.
Splendid. So, okay, down to the questions. Firstly, what in a sentence is funding your hobo existence?
Right now, it's personal savings with my business partner as we build to launch our company.
Marvelous. Where are you located at the moment?
Right now, I'm located in San Francisco, West Coast, US. But honestly, I mean, I haven't lived in one place for more than 3 months for a couple of years now. So it's a really nomadic existence.
You earn your hobo medal.
Yes. Is it a gold medal or?
Well, I think every 3 months, you're saying, approximately, you move?
3 months is the biggest amount of time I've spent in a place.
That's the longest. You're definitely a contender for gold then. Definitely a contender for gold.
Right. Well, I'll put in some more years and we'll see where I get to.
Splendid. All right, let's find out about your luggage. So what is the average weight of your luggage?
I would say around 10 kilos. I would really, really like to get that down, but right now I'm traveling with, I would say at least half of that is work stuff. So if I could somehow magically make that work stuff transport itself, I would be down to about 5 kilos, I think.
That's pretty light. Pretty light. And obviously cabin luggage only?
Yes, cabin luggage only. Actually, I had to check a bag yesterday because of work, and it was one of the worst experiences of my life. I have been going cabin luggage for, I don't know, a good amount of time now, and going back to checking a bag, I stood in a queue for about an hour, and talk to surly men that didn't even want to take my bag. So it made me very happy to be living my cabin luggage only existence.
Yeah, the blissful cabin luggage only lifestyle.
Yeah, and it especially hurts because they now have a couple of lines set up where it's like, you know, just print your boarding pass. Like, I checked in online, and so if I just had to print my boarding pass, I would have been able to do it in about 5 seconds, and instead I went into the line that stretched down the hall and out into, you know, the San Francisco airport parking area.
I feel your pain, Jimmy. I feel your pain.
Yeah.
We all feel your pain, all us fellow hobos.
I'm glad to share it with other people, because it wasn't pleasant standing there in line by myself.
Anyway, let's move on. So, what is most likely to get you questioned by airport security?
Ooh, I've got a bunch of Ziploc bags that have strange looking clips and buckles in them, and zips and things like that. So that random assortment of buckles and clips and zips is probably high on the list. Or I think the other thing, depending on the personality of the guy checking me out, the Peruvian moustache face mask I carry is quite likely to get it done as well. They're a little tough to describe, but if you've seen one, you'll know exactly what I mean and why the airport security might not like them.
I'm intrigued, regardless of the fact I'm not even an airport security person, I'm intrigued by a Peruvian face mask.
Peruvian moustache face mask.
Peruvian moustache face mask. I don't know, maybe this is going to feature in the next section, but the fact that that's part of your standard luggage, is there some kind of secrets that you can't reveal to us, Jimmy?
The revelation is the fun times. I think even if you're going cabin luggage only, you've got to pick a couple of things for the fun times. So I've got to, taking up valuable space in my carry-on is a Peruvian moustache face mask and an of-the-era Billy Ray Cyrus t-shirt, oversized.
I'm wondering what kind of fun times, but maybe we won't go there. Maybe we won't go there. Next question.
That's for the different style of podcast, I think.
What is the most expensive and least expensive thing that's worth carrying?
Can I just point out that any sort of sexy fun times with a Billy Ray Cyrus t-shirt and a Peruvian moustache face mask would be a very strange sexy fun time indeed.
I wasn't insinuating anything. I wasn't saying anything.
Sorry, could you repeat the question?
I can repeat the question. So, what is the most expensive and the least expensive thing that is worth carrying?
Well, right now the most expensive thing I'm carrying is our prototype of our new product. It's the fact that I'm carrying it is a little play on words itself, but I think we'll get to that. The least expensive thing that's worth carrying is probably there's a $2 USB multi-plug that I have. So you plug into your rare USB ports on your MacBook Pro, and then you have four coming out of one, and that is a real lifesaver. I run my mouse and an external hard drive and my phone off that, so it's pretty useful.
Good tip. Okay, and final question. Anything else that we might like to know about your luggage?
Yeah, well, that's what I was just referring to, is that our luggage is our luggage. We made it. So the most expensive thing that I carry is our bag prototype, our carry-on backpack that we've been working on for a couple of years now and getting very close to launching. So that's pretty exciting. And beyond the fact that we made it, I think I honestly think that it's the best bag I've ever owned. So at the very least, depending on how the launch goes, I'll have, you know, my favorite bag that cost me tens of thousands of dollars. But I really strongly recommend to anybody out there to make their own bag, because when strangers come up to you at airports and say, "Where did you get that bag?" it's pretty much the best feeling in the world.
Next to that recommendation is, shouldn't we buy your bag, Jimmy?
You should, yeah. Yes. I mean, it's much too hard to go and develop and build your own bag, so just come to us, because I've done it for you. We've done it for you.
There we go. You've done all the hard work. So next best thing is to buy one of Jimmy's bags, which indeed makes you a very special guest on the Hobo Suitcase interview. What's special about your bag, Jimmy? Why would a hobo CEO or indeed a non-hobo be interested in your bag?
Yeah, the main thing is for us that we were tired of bags being difficult to deal with. I mean, a lot of people want to travel carry-on only and want to be active, but the way bags are kind of set up in their default style is not conducive to accessing your stuff and going through security and all that thing. So we've got a backpack that opens up flat like a suitcase. So it's, I mean, you just place stuff in onto one half of it and then shut it just like a suitcase, which has changed my life in terms of packing, because packing into a bag for a while took me, you know, hours of trying to move stuff around and then grab stuff out again from the bottom. So that's a big thing. We've made it really easy to zip the straps away and carry it like a duffel. So, you know, if you were, say, going into a meeting, that plus the fact that we've gone from minimalist aesthetic on the outside makes it, you know, look very sleek and respectable enough. You won't have branding plastered all over it. It's more of a refined look. So there's a combination of, yeah, the ease of packing and access to your gear, the fact that it looks a step above your standard North Face or outdoor brand backpack. And there's a lot of little hidden goodies in there in terms of organization that I could talk for about 3 hours on, but you just have to find the bag and see for yourself.
Yeah, nice. So how do I get one? Where can I get one?
Well, we're going to launch on Kickstarter. So that's scheduled for late July. We're really pushing that at the moment. If not late July, it'll be soon after that. I guess the easiest way to keep up with the developments on that is go to our website and sign up for the newsletter, which is we've made very easy to do. So I can give you the address if you'd like.
Yeah, give us the URL.
Okay, it's www.minaal.com. So that's MINAAL.com.
Splendid. Awesome. Well, we'll link to that in the show notes.
Fantastic.
And,
thank you.
Yeah, a big thank you to our super special guest, Jimmy Hayes.
I feel a lot more special than when we started this talk.
I'm glad. I think if there's any takeaway from this interview, it's that Jimmy Hayes is very special.
Well, you're special too, Chris. I really do think that.
Awesome. Awesome. Cool. Splendid. So, thank you, Jimmy. That was an interesting and very relevant suitcase interview. Don't forget to check out his website, minaal.com. That's MINAAL.com. And the Kickstarter project isn't up yet, but that should be going up fairly soon. So stay tuned for details.
Yeah, watch out for that. All right. So, moving to the more shady subjects.
Oh, no, we've still got to do some more social media. Come on, we've got to big ourselves up, Nico. I'll let you do this bit. What social media interactions have we had of late?
Well, we had a couple of people contacting us on Twitter. For example, somebody really liked the ups and downs, our Debrief of Asia podcast. And here's the tip, the app that we were talking about that helps you figure out different time zones at the same time. It's called Time Scroller. Uh-huh. I actually looked it up on my phone. It's pretty nice. I think it's the legit solution to scheduling meetings with people in different time zones. Gotta get that utility if you do a lot of meetings with people from different time zones.
That was from Ian Robinson, Independent Ian.
And then we got another nice contact from
Bob Malloy.
Exactly.
Bob_Malloy.
And he says that he's really loving the Hobo CEO podcast. And he already listened to all the episodes twice and can't wait for more. So here we go. More food for everybody out there.
I've listened to every episode at least twice. Anyway, let's roll on to our topic for the day, which is becoming a Hobo Houdini.
And that's basically a follow-up on how do we come up with the Hobo Houdini idea? Well, it's a follow-up to the blog post you wrote about the hobo trap.
Yeah, indeed. I wrote a post, you may have seen it on the site last week, about watch out, digital nomads, it's a trap. Which, just to summarize, basically, you know, once you start leading an unconventional life, it seems harder and harder to slip back into the conventional way of doing things. And, you know, this could be just like going back to working in a company and living in a fixed place, rather than being more migratory or slow travel oriented like we are. But really, all those things are conceivable. It's conceivable to go back and live in England or something like that. What isn't possible, however, is to change back one's mindset. Because one of the things that happens when you start venturing into the unknown, traveling, running your own business, is your mindset will start changing because you're kind of not reading from the normal script. And that is something that you just can't change back. You can't just go back to the way you used to see things 10 years ago. And that there is the trap. It's like once you kind of venture into this new place. I used the Plato's allegory of the cave. If you don't know, it's this idea of there's this chap who's in a cave with some other people and they're chained down and all they can do is look at the wall. And on the wall, they can see shadows and lights coming from the sunlight and what's going on outside of the cave. Then one day, one of them breaks free, gets outside of the cave, and suddenly sees this whole world, which they had never conceived before. Basically, as far as they're concerned, they'd lived all their life in the cave, and all they'd ever seen was that wall and those reflections. And that's what they thought that the whole world was. But this guy breaks out, and he sees that actually that's just a shadow. It pales in comparison to what the world really was. And so the chap goes back into the cave to enthusiastically free the other people who were also in the cave, but they don't believe him.
Yeah,
they think he's talking rubbish, and eventually he gets killed or something like that. I don't know if any of us are going to get killed, but it's a similar kind of idea, is we've kind of changed our mindset and we're in a new place. It's impossible for us to go back and then think, oh, that wall is all that the world is, because we've seen what it is. It's difficult to kind of go back where other people that you may be associated with before are still kind of set in their way of seeing things.
Like, you can't reverse personal development.
Exactly.
And I also have to, I just, on a side note, I really like how you tell the stories and how in with the British people, it's always called a chap. And with the, if an American told the story, it's the same story, but then it's always a guy.
Yeah.
A guy. All right. So that's cool. And yeah, so that's the trap. So basically, there's something like a conventional trap, leading your life like everybody else does, like most people do, the conventional lifestyle. And then we're moving in the unconventional, and you're identifying the how that can become really hard to get out of again or change whatever you learned and however you developed during that time. And now we want to talk about how to deal with that trap and maybe become a Hobo Houdini and free yourself from that trap. We don't want to get back, but we don't want to be too trapped in it, right?
Exactly, exactly. So why don't we start just like with a brief kind of overview of how we have escaped the conventional trap?
Yeah.
So I guess we covered a lot of the main factors in our episode number one, five ingredients for location-independent lifestyle. Being able to face fear, seeking favorable circumstances, being able to sacrifice, focus mm-hmm. and action, and also your mindset. Those are the kind of essential ingredients.
Exactly.
My debut into being a hobo CEO was when I went off to Japan. I basically kind of took a leap of faith, and I was on holiday in Japan, and I just decided to stay there and try and figure out how to make everything work. I had already started a business, and it was making some money, but it wasn't really making enough. So straight away, there was that kind of fear factor. I didn't really have enough money to sustain myself long term. I was really going into the unknown. In terms of sacrifice, I basically left everything I had. I didn't even sell my stuff. I just kind of left it. I had a studio and I just left it behind. After a couple of months of being away and realizing I really wasn't going back, I got one of my friends to just kind of sell off my stuff and take a percentage. So there was lots of kind of nice guitars and a really good mixing desk, and there was some really good stuff. But
I think, Chris, and that you just mentioned a very good strategy also worked for me pretty well. Like reducing the level of attachment you have to some material things. Like if you, like most people have a lot of stuff, and if you're moving around, basically it's not you can't afford to have that much stuff because you can't carry it all around.
Yeah.
What you just said, I think that's exactly what also happened to me. It's like you leave some stuff behind when you go on a, like, let's call it a bigger, longer vacation or extended travel. Once you're on the road, you realize how little you actually need a lot of those things. So it becomes much easier to let go of them. So it's a good strategy to, first you can store things, but after a while you will realize that you don't really need them that much. And then it's easier to let go of them.
Yeah.
One question about your situation, how tied in, or were you in a conventional life when you left to Japan at that time?
I guess I'd already laid the foundations because I was already, you know, I'd been working freelance for years. So I guess it wasn't such a big leap of faith for me because I was used to an irregular income. I was used to not really knowing what was going to be happening in a few months' time. So I was partway there.
Cool.
Yeah.
In my case, since my main education is in music, or more specifically playing jazz guitar, I mean, even when I did that, that was kind of unconventional. From there, it was all just a couple of steps of, like, weird steps, but kind of a natural development, natural steps towards seeking and staying with a even more unconventional. Yeah, is it really that unconventional? It's like, it's much more self-defined. And we're going to come to that later, like the kind of responsibility that comes with going astray from the conventional path.
Anyway, it seems both of us kind of eased into this lifestyle. We didn't like quit our job and suddenly do something. It's like we were already doing things differently. And we just kind of ramped up how different it was over a period of time.
Yeah, I definitely think that you have to kind of grow into that, and you know, like put your toes in the water first, and then it's not something that you can just establish in a couple of weeks. That might be possible, but would be hard.
I don't know. I think it's like ramps or like steps. It's like you kind of you take a big step and then it plateaus, and then you take another step and then it plateaus.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Rather than it being like a gradual sliding ramp. I think it was just a week into being in Japan. I had a 5-week return ticket. And after a week, I was just thinking, there's no way I'm going back to England. I'm going to stay here. It was just like, it wasn't even like a kind of rational thing. In fact, it was really irrational because I just started this business in the UK. I'd founded it with Phil, my co-founder. And we kind of had a plan which really revolved around me being in the UK. Or it did really, from Phil's perspective, you know, it was like not what was planned at all. And it kind of precluded us from doing a lot of things business-wise. So really, mm-hmm. it was quite an irrational decision.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it wasn't necessarily irrational looking at it big picture. I think kind of instincts are often very, very revealing, and your subconscious, your intuition is able to make kind of massively parallel decisions and take into account a lot more than you can just with your rational thought processes. I don't know. I mean, I've got no regrets. I don't like to regret things anyway. I think it's just pointless regretting things. But, you know, that was like a step. So it was like, you know, going to Japan was maybe a step. One of the kind of big steps I took, I remember, was making that decision, you know, then staying in Japan. And then maybe it kind of plateaued a bit, and then I got set up in Japan, and then I realized I was going to stay there long term. But anyway, the thing I was trying to say is I think the change maybe comes over in like kind of a series of steps rather than like kind of one huge sudden change or a gradual ramping thing. It's like there'll be kind of steps along the way.
But you basically followed what made you happy, right? So maybe some of the big steps and some of the, what you called like the leaps, have to come from a more like an irrational point.
Yeah.
Like intuition thing. And I think the first time you just, you cancel a flight that you have already booked or stuff like that, it feels really weird, but you just follow what feels good to you.
Yeah. Certainly you'll end up in all kinds of trouble like we do. If you do what you feel is good.
Exactly. So mindset before action, or does action lead into mindset? Like, we have written some stuff down, for example, that we became less interested in material things. Is that like, does that happen and then you become a hobo, or is it more the other way around? You know,
that's a good question. That's a really good question. Chicken and the egg kind of thing.
Chicken. Yeah. I mean, as I said, going away, for example, leaving a lot of stuff, storing it at home and then realizing that you don't really need it is the other way around. So the mindset becomes easier if you start doing the action, which is, you know, traveling,
yeah,
basically takes away the attachment to material things.
Like I didn't set out to become a minimalist. I didn't think to myself, I like the idea of being a minimalist. That's what I want to do. It just kind of happened as a result of what I did in my life.
Exactly.
Yeah. Interesting. Shall we, let's maybe get some sort of bullet points here. What does a hobo Houdini do in the first instance? How did I become a hobo Houdini and get out of the conventional life? One of the things you've maybe uncovered is following what made me happy, following what felt good. Another one is taking action. Another one I think is facing fear. You know, it was a bit kind of scary. But I guess the joy overpowered the fear. Any other ingredients? How about you, Nico? What kind of led you to do your Houdini trick?
Even though we like to talk about the things that make us happy, I also had a... let's look at the other side. There was a lot of things that I really didn't like and that made me take action because I wanted to avoid that kind of pain, basically.
Yeah.
I remember us sitting in a... with your brother, actually, when he was visiting us in Berlin. I remember us sitting in that one cocktail bar thing. I was pretty... unsatisfied with the job I had at that time, and we were already like talking about and preparing you know the hobo lifestyle and working on artwork on the side and so on, and I was getting really fed up with the work environment I had to cope with and not being able to make my own calls, following other people's decisions, doing stuff that I thought was unnecessary and just took away from creating value for the company. And I remember that you were kind of laughing at me, and you were saying, yeah, you were saying like, I'm ripe, like this is, I've had enough, and I should just basically take that emotion and make some decisions accordingly and quit the job.
So yeah, like the negative motivator rather than the positive motivator, I guess that's
I think that's another thing. I mean, you have to have something to look out to, that you're looking for and you're looking forward to. And then there's also something that you definitely know you're done with. You don't want to have that anymore.
Yeah.
And you know if that comes into the right alchemy, like the right kind of mix, then you're good to go.
So. Let's move on, because the main thing we want to talk about is being the hobo Houdini and kind of dealing with what kind of happens afterwards when you're in a much more unconventional place and you have a new set of problems.
Yes.
Just to, again, reference that, the episode number one, we kind of go into more detail about this topic of getting out of the conventional life and into location independence. So what's happened to us now? What are we finding our kind of new... quote-unquote hobo world problems are?
The further I go down that road, the more you stray away from conventional solutions, the more you have to take on responsibility and create your own solutions, or at least do the research, talk to people that have maybe done this already and so on to find new solutions for your situation. Because as a general theme, I'm becoming much more interested in all the exceptions to any kinds of rules, regulations, and laws than to the whatever is like the regular solution fits my situation.
Yeah, exactly. We're not really reading from the default script anymore. It's like we're improvising the lines. That's the way I like to kind of think of it. And I think this is the case for, it doesn't necessarily have to be people who are traveling around running a business. If you're kind of decide to quit job and become an entrepreneur, you're going to face this kind of thing in a big way. You know, you're not going to be told what to do every day. It's down to you to decide. You have all this responsibility. You have all these options. You have all these choices. As you're saying, Nico, is one thing that you do start doing is you start looking more at kind of unconventional options, because you kind of, you know, your mind's been opened to doing things unconventionally. You know, it's a Pandora's box. You're kind of opening up more ways of doing things unconventionally once you kind of start looking at this way of doing things.
Yeah. Let me give you two examples for stuff that just isn't covered in conventional thinking, in conventional law. So, for example, Artweb is a software as a service kind of company. Software as a service is a really interesting phenomenon. And the interesting thing about it is that if you have a huge company, like I read something about 37 Signals and how they basically, how much money they're making and so on, kind of. I mean, nobody really knows, but people speculate about it. And the interesting thing is that with an old kind of business, if you are shipping stuff all throughout the world, that's got, you have to take care of taxes, customs, and so on. There's a lot of cost involved. If you have a software business, you can basically ship and provide your kind of service or product all over the world, and you don't have to deal with all this, you know, customs and shipping and so on, because software is just too new as that it would be properly covered by these old laws about trade and stuff. And another interesting example is, as far as I understand, German tax law. I found out when I researched how to do extended travels as a German, I found out that if you leave Germany for more than 6 months, or I think they say like 180 or 185 days per year, then basically the German government, or whatever the institution is that's responsible for that, doesn't think that you would be eligible necessarily to pay taxes in Germany, because they think you might have to go. The reason why you're not in Germany is because you are in another country and you should pay taxes there. But that's, you know, that's the conventional thing. The problem is, if you're traveling around a lot and you're hopping from one country to the other, you're basically not eligible for paying taxes in, or some kind of taxes in Germany anymore, because your residency moved. But since you're traveling through so many other countries, you're never there long enough to pay taxes there. So you're basically like, even if you talk to a lawyer, they say, well, that's a strange situation you're having.
This is a classic hobo CEO problem.
That's what I mean.
I've met countless people with this same issue. Is no one knows what the tax rules are. Even like, you know, I've had great problems with the Inland Revenue in the UK. It's like getting any kind of concrete answer as to how and when and if I should be paying tax has been very difficult, you know, even coming from the horse's mouth. I remember, you know, when I first left to Japan, it kind of took them months to come back with any kind of answer. And then they've changed their mind since. So it's this is a kind of example of, you know, the kind of unconventional issues that you're going to come up with. But there's even more kind of simple, banal things, just like the kind of people that you will meet and the kind of people that you, or maybe old friends and things, is, you know, you've got a different mindset, you've got a different lifestyle, and it just doesn't kind of fit so well. You know, like friends getting married and things like this, you know, that it might become quite difficult to go back to somebody's wedding or something, because you're, you know, in Vietnam or whatever, and the wedding's in France. And whereas you were kind of previously kind of socializing in a small group of friends for an extended period of time, and genuinely you'd be in the same place and it would be easier to kind of meet up and do things.
Yeah.
You travel around, you meet more people, it just becomes much harder to maintain that same kind of high level of contact with people.
Yeah.
And for most people, that is kind of tantamount to you not being their friend anymore. It's like, you know, it's not always the case. I think it depends how deeply you connect with people. But one of the things that typically defines human relationships is like the amount of time that you spend together. And, you know, we're really, really out on the edge there. Nico, we're not even, we haven't been in the same country, let alone the same city, for much of the last 9 months. You know, but this is typical for us. This is just like normal.
Yeah. But what you're just saying is that, and that's what I'm discovering as well, is that there's another side to this. So you become location independent. And if you're listening to this and you're not, that sounds like, oh, that's great, I can go wherever I want. So once you're on the other side of that, once you're looking at the other side of that coin, it's like, why should I be where, when? So it becomes really arbitrary at times. And I remember, Chris, we discussed this, that if you fix that one date where you have to be in one place, that basically then becomes an anchor maybe to do a lot of different things, because we don't have to be in a place. And I was offered to do a seminar in Würzburg, where I was living for quite some time from people I worked there. And they were trying to give me a date in October. And I was like, this was, like, you know, a couple of months back. And I was like, October, I'm not really sure where. Yeah. And I was immediately asking them under what kind of circumstances I could possibly cancel this. Because even though it's a paid gig and that kind of stuff, it could create a big problem for me. Because if I'm in another country, it wouldn't make sense to go back just to do the seminar, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah. So once you're really free, everything you tie up becomes way more heavy. It feels more heavy than from a perspective where you know that you are going to be in one place, and the exception is that you have that you're going to go someplace else. That is much easier to calculate, basically.
Exactly. So let's maybe talk about some of our Hobo Houdini strategies for escaping these problems, or at least coping with them.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe kind of following on this example you just mentioned, I wrote a post about this last year. It was, what was it? What happens when you have complete
yes.
freedom to be any place, any time, or something?
Yeah, exactly.
And the crux of the post was, once I'd kind of freed all my time and place commitments, I started finding myself recreating time and place commitments based on really arbitrary and totally unnecessary things. Like if I said to my friends from Tokyo, I reckon I'll be back in April or something,
mm-hmm.
then I would really rearrange my life around going back to Tokyo in April, even though it was, you know, it wasn't like a work gig. It wasn't a promise. It was just a sort of vague notion. But in the absence of any other kind of thing tying me down, my mind just wanted to create some kind of schedule or something.
Yeah.
The takeaway for that there is just to kind of be on the lookout for what your mind does with respect to kind of having some kind of plan in the future. I think what you've got to get good at is just learning to kind of be comfortable with the unknown, you know, learning to not have a plan and be okay with it.
Yeah, and I'm experiencing that at the moment, and it's really hard at times to not have a fixed idea of where I am in a couple of days and what I'm going to do there and so on and so forth. We also noted down, and I think that's a pretty interesting one. It's a little bit in the Houdini shady business kind of thing. Keeping a low profile at the right time and not bragging. So what can you say about this, Chris?
Yeah, this is definitely comes up in kind of social situations. I think you could abstract this across any situation where you've got something where other people don't have, or maybe they want. You're going to open yourself up as a target. You know, if you're like, if you're really rich and you start kind of talking about how rich you are and the fancy car you drive and stuff like that, it's, you know, you're just going to create yourself as a target. And so, so you deserve it. It's like, if you're bragging about your riches, it's to make yourself feel better at the expense of other people not feeling good about themselves.
Sometimes you tell people when you introduce yourself that you are an international entrepreneur. And sometimes you just tell them, well, I'm doing some internet freelance work.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. And it's and you've kind of got to be careful, because you might be seen to be bragging even though you're not intending to brag. I started realizing recently that when people ask me what I've been doing and where I've been, I'm very quick to preface the list of the destinations with the fact that I'm working and I'm not on holiday. It's because people could just kind of think that my life is a constant holiday, which in a kind of sense it is. But, you know, we were sat in Vietnam basically working 9 to 5 every day. We weren't there just sort of chilling out and, you know, doing nothing on the beach. We actually went there because we wanted to get some work done. So I try not to say things which are going to make other people uncomfortable, because ultimately that's going to kind of come back and bite me on the ass. It's going to get me into some sort of situation where somebody's like shooting at me in some way, or I'm going to have to kind of defend myself. So I think, as you just said, sometimes, you know, when you go to an event or something and you're kind of, somebody asks you what you're doing, just say, oh, I just freelance. I work online.
Yeah, I work on online. It's a great sentence.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, okay. That's definitely true. Then, of course, if you're around the people that do something similar, that's way easier. You can exchange all kinds of information. You can tell them what you're really doing and how it's working, because it's basically like a little bit like an insider thing, right? Let's look at where can we actually take advantage of some of the unconventional and exceptional situations that we're in. One of the first things that comes to mind is since we can go any place at any time, like most of the time, we can, for example, we don't have to rely on school holidays. We don't have to travel when everybody else is traveling. We don't have to shop when everybody else is shopping, you know?
Yeah. There's a huge upside to having these extra options. And I think this is another Hobo Houdini tip, is to really kind of leverage these extra options that you get from having this unconventional life, is don't fall back into line with everybody else. I think this is another kind of sort of unlearning thing. You've got to kind of unprogram yourself in the same way as you've got to deprogram, I just described, in that you need to kind of get comfortable with not having a plan. It's the same thing, that's like the default script, is having a plan. And it's the same thing, in many places is there's a default script of how you're meant to do things. You know, you're meant to go on holiday in August. That's the school holidays. You know, this is a classic one. It's like, when do you go on holiday? It's like, you know, most people think, oh, what are you doing this summer? As though summer's the time to go on holiday. And so I think like resetting that default script and learning. I mean, this was great in Japan, because Japan is such a kind of homogenous society where everybody does everything in the same way at the same time. And it's just so easy to hack that. It's like, I remember me and my girlfriend, we went to this, we booked this fairly poncy hotel really cheap because it was off season. And we were the only people in the hotel, and we had this huge kind of spa, public bath to ourselves. And, it was beautiful. And like, the countryside was covered in snow. We had these really beautiful mountain walks. If we go back to the same region in the summer or the spring, it'd just be kind of completely rammed, and you'd be queuing for everything, and everything would be double or triple the price. It was equally beautiful. It was just a different season.
Being places off season is really a classic. Traveling, taking flights in the middle of the week, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays saves up a lot of money as well. And then we don't have to travel and commute through rush hour, for example. I really appreciate that. I sometimes remember back to the times when I had to be at the office when everybody else was there, and it's just a waste of time.
Yeah.
Waste of your lifetime.
Yeah. So another Hobo Houdini strategy is acceptance.
Absolutely.
I think with the changes I've made and the way that my attitudes and mindset has changed, you know, there's more responsibility and there's more kind of differences. And as we're saying, you get these kind of problems as a result of these differences. And also, you know, you have more options, more choice, and more responsibility. And that's quite tough. You know, I remember like when I was younger, I just didn't have the sense that I was responsible for everything in my life. Kind of wanted to blame things on something external.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't do that anymore. It's like, it's down to me, basically. It's not the government's fault. It's my fault. You know, it's not like my neighbor's fault. It's not my girlfriend's fault. It's my fault.
Yeah, we don't even have a boss to put the blame on.
So we can't blame anyone. So the idea of acceptance, I find, is very important. And it helps. It doesn't necessarily make things happen easier, but it kind of makes it less hard. Because if you've got a difficult situation and there's no clear solution, like resenting it and being angry about it is just not going to solve it. It's like, okay, you know, tax rules are complex. I don't understand them. Okay, well, that's tricky, but I'm not going to get angry about it. I'm just going to keep looking until I find the solution. You know, that kind of way of looking at things.
I think the whole thing just makes sense and is fun if you are, and that's what I'm experiencing at least most of the time, if you like that kind of challenge, if you like if minimalism is something that is or not having that many things is something that bothers you, that can be, really be a problem. But it's something that you enjoy. That, for example, like I have that little joy of figuring out what I really need and what I don't need, and how to pack only what I really need and what I probably won't need. And I also have that, have fun figuring out these unconventional solutions, and I have my own, like there's this own kind of joy in, once you come up with them and once they work for you, and you have these little advantages, or you say you can save some money, and there's different, you know, like perks and benefits that come with it. That's the fun part, and it's really exciting. And if you don't think, like if somebody doesn't feel that that's exciting, then it can, and it's only stressful to them, it's really then not the way to go, you know.
Yeah, you're not going to be a hobo Houdini.
Exactly.
So let's just throw in one more key hobo Houdini technique. And I think that's connecting with other like-minded people all the time.
Okay.
I think it's something we've probably mentioned in every podcast, is, you know, connecting with the right people. It's just such a huge hack. It just really kind of gets you where you want to be faster. It kind of cuts out so many of the kind of problems that will have plagued humans for millions of years. Now we can really reach out and seek people who are ultra like-minded. And that's been a real savior for me in this unconventional life, is when I started connecting with more and more entrepreneurs who were running their businesses remotely.
I think we have to do a whole episode sometime on and research a little bit the reasons why humans need this kind of external confirmation. Like, you know, like if you hang out with people, there's this energy that kind of, it can be inspiration, can be some kind of energy, but there's this feeling of, ah, yeah, okay, so I'm not the only weirdo thinking this is a good idea kind of thing. And it's probably, maybe you can reference some evolutionary biology books, but there's got to be a good reason why we actually need this, and why we start doubting ourselves,
yeah,
if we don't have that.
Well, we all looked for confirmation from our peers.
Yeah.
So, fellow hobos and hobos in the making, I hope our ramblings this week have given you some tips for how you can become a hobo Houdini.
And also, if you have any hobo Houdini tricks up your sleeve, and you want to share them with us and others, please leave us a comment on the blog or connect to us on Twitter at HoboCEO, so that we can spread the word and maybe get some good ideas as to what other tricks we haven't yet discovered or forgot to mention.
Indeed. Splendid. Well, thanks for listening.
See you guys soon.
Yeah, and we'll see you next time.
Have fun. Bye.
Bye.
Lunching, launching, morality, morons, pipe dreams, protons, hunting, leaping, jumping, kite surfing, landing pages, optimization, and superpowers.
It's a kind of magic. Another amazing podcast magic production.